Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off site-wide, plus premium doorbusters, and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't get enough of the fan in the morning?
Shown up.
Because this is nothing like that.
Working.
Al and Jerry are here with stories they'd never get to cover on the morning show.
Very sexy robot.
Hey, look at that pig.
Shenanigans.
Naked yoga.
My mother had a bad experience with these goats.
Let's hump the fence.
It's Al and Jerry's post-game podcast.
All right, a very special podcast for you today as the boys have departed the studio. Usually it's just me and Al, but once a year this has become customary. We welcome in Andrew Lee, who was the winner of the Radiothon.
Hungerthon.
I'm sorry, the Hungerthon bidding for this this podcast.
Yeah.
Andrew is up from Florida. What is up?
Not a whole lot. Everything is going very well. How are you guys?
Excellent. Now, you normally come with your own questions, and I will say if you're going to turn this off, because it's you normally just like me and Jerry, many people enjoyed your hosting or with the questions and all last time, so I would tell people don't run away. Normally, when I hear a guest is coming on, I shut everything right off. But yeah, you did a terrific job last time. Did you do two times?
Two times, correct, yes.
Two times, and people really enjoyed it. So yeah, welcome back.
That's good to hear. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So should I get right into
it? Let's rock into it, yeah.
All right. So I have a – I think you guys will find this interesting. This year's bidding was very different from previous years, and there's some sort of peculiarities that I thought you guys might find fascinating.
Okay.
So I guess the first thing is that they changed the closing time of the auction.
Is that right?
It was previously, I believe it was 4 p.m., mm-hmm. and they changed it to 8 a.m.?
Yeah, it was weird that it closed during the show.
It was very surprising to me, and I think they actually
changed it. That was really surprising.
Really surprising. I think they actually changed it from when they originally posted it, because I looked at it, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll bid in this in the afternoon, and then I woke up one morning and I got an email. I was like, oh, this lot that you're following is closing in like 30 minutes.
Hmm.
I was like, 30 minutes?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I rushed over. I logged onto my computer. And let me tell you a little bit about sort of the bid history and what had happened.
Yeah.
So I got involved around like 8:20, I believe, was my first bid. Now, it closes at 8, but every time somebody bids, they extend it
yeah.
for 10 minutes.
So. How many people were you battling to win this auction?
As I look at it right here, I see quickly around 5-ish.
Wow.
Five people?
Around five people, wow. Yeah. So the first thing that I thought was very strange was there was one bidder who bid himself or herself. So they bid first.
Okay.
And then they upped their own bid like three times.
Nice.
That's weird.
And I was like, is this Al driving up the price on me?
No, because if I got stuck with that, I'd be like, what the heck?
You're paying for it.
Yeah.
Al's bringing his own topics to the podcast. That's okay. Funny. So that I thought was very strange. And the second thing that I thought was there was a bit of a bidding war at the end. So I got involved 8:20, and it was at $4,500.
Wow. Very popular, Jerry.
And then from there on in, it was basically myself and somebody who went by the name of Zach Wilson.
Imagine he came in here, Jerry, just to whip our asses. I heard you two punks talking about me all season.
That's pretty funny.
So I'd like to ask you guys, pretend I'm Zach Wilson, the real Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
What would you say to me?
I would like to know, like, what happens when you first, like, he came from Utah. Like,
yeah.
What is it like to move to New Jersey, and then you have to find a house, and then you get traded and have to do the same thing in Denver?
Mm.
It seems very like, I would feel like that would affect me as a player on the field, like at practice. All I'd be thinking of is, where am I supposed to move? How do I know which neighborhood to move to? How am I getting to, like, that stuff would, because I know how I am. If I have a doctor's appointment in like 3 weeks, I will just think about that. So that would really throw me off as a player, like moving from Utah to New Jersey and trying to navigate life. Plus being the age he is. They're young. They're very young.
They're kids. He was probably 21.
So I would ask him really about that, like less so than about playing football.
I would ask if
football.
He feels like the Jets ruined him.
That's a good question, Jerry.
I would. I really would, because I really only had one big year in college. But my God, the way he was, I shouldn't say, he wasn't good. So he's obviously got a part in this. But you can also come back to the coaching, the team, really, we have no sense of patience around here as a fan base. I would love to know if he feels like the Jets or being a Jet ruined his career.
Mm.
Still has time to, I mean, look at Sam Darnold. He's got a chance.
Correct.
But you got to get back out there and play. And I don't know if he's going to get that opportunity anywhere.
Right.
You know?
We shall see, I guess.
Yeah. I thought Sam Darnold's career was over too. And all of a sudden he resurfaces in Minnesota. Quarterback gets hurt, and there is the quarterback again. So you don't know. I mean,
Geno Smith was dead for years.
And completely got his career back.
Yep.
All right, so now out of those three former Jet quarterbacks, who would you most like?
Sam Darnold.
You want Sam Darnold sitting here? You want to ask him a couple questions?
Oh, no, I don't want to talk to any of them, really.
Oh, okay.
I thought what you were going to ask is which one would you want as your quarterback on a football team? It would be Sam Darnold.
I was going to say, who do you want here as a guest co-host, and who would you want to talk to?
I would take Geno Smith out of those three.
Because he had the whole thing with IK and Polly.
Yeah, he had
the
that.
The rec stuff.
He got the to start a Giant game instead of...
Stopped Eli's streak.
And who did we want instead?
Because
they had a third quarterback.
I forget
that we were like, what's the point in starting
Geno
Smith?
It was a young player. I don't remember who
it was. His career is over.
Yeah.
And just how.
I remember fighting with Boomer that was 2017,
I
think.
We were all fighting Boomer. Boomer goes, no, he's the backup. He deserves a chance. We're like, he's never going to be a starter. Yep. Why would we start him?
Exactly.
So, I think he has an interesting story to tell for a long sit down. I would listen. If somebody told me Geno Smith was on an hour long podcast, I would listen to that.
All right. Well, all three of those guys can certainly outbid me, so it's possible.
Ooh, okay.
That next year,
see if Geno Smith wants to come in.
You'll be talking to Zach Wilson for real.
I actually used to. I have had some fights with Geno Smith on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
A couple times because he a couple times took shots at Craig Carton after Craig got in trouble.
Yeah,
he was like, "Oh, is this the guy who was bad mouthing me?" So I took some shots back at him, and then he took some shots back at me.
Interesting.
This is when he still stunk, but now he's a very good quarterback. So he wins.
All right. So bringing it back to, I guess, myself versus quote-unquote Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
So I got involved at like 4,500, and we just went back and forth for the next 45 minutes, essentially.
A slugfest.
More or less, because he went up to 48.25. I went up to $5,000. I went up to around that range. He went up to $5,000. I went to 5,500. He went to $6,000. And then I finally won at 6,500.
Wow.
Which was the final bid. And I'm telling you, I said this last year, but I guess inflation is real because this year's final bid price was more than the two that I had won previously combined.
Wow. Or Jerry and I are very popular now. Podcasting has gotten very popular, as you can tell. They're paying big money to podcasts. Unfortunately, Jerry and I aren't on those podcasts yet, but We're in. We've done 10 years almost of podcasts. So
we're
one
on
of
our
these
way.
Days, we're going to hit a big contract.
That's it.
Well, if you want, I can give you this bid sheet, and you bring this to your bosses at Odyssey, and
I
say,
"I would like to do that."
This is exactly how much people have bid on this experience.
Interesting. I would like to do that.
Now,
by the way, Davis Webb was the rookie quarterback from the Giants that
Davis
year.
Webb.
Wanted Davis Webb to start.
Well, because you felt like at least it was the future. You're getting
right.
a look. Geno had a career already. That was the whole argument. So continue. Sorry.
Interesting.
Let me tell you, Davis Webb also makes more money than me. He
yep.
could have outbid me, too. All right. So I guess here's something that is related to this experience that I don't know if you guys know, but Hungerthon will be coming up, I guess, in a couple of weeks
yeah.
for this year.
Oh, he's right around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Thanksgiving
yep.
time, sure.
Do you think this, I guess, bid is going to continue now that there's a new program manager?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
I thought that it was a Spike-originated concept.
No, Mark Chernoff, wasn't it?
The Hungerthon itself, Mark Chernoff.
Okay.
And then... We had offered this up 1 year, I think even with Chernoff,
mm-hmm.
to do it. But yeah, you cannot be the new person that comes into WFA and cancels Hungerthon. That would not that would not look good on your resume.
I didn't think that he would cancel Hungerthon. I just don't know if he was going to offer this experience.
He's like, Alan Jerry on our real show. Let's get just focus on the main guys. No, we're going to be in here.
Okay.
Because look at this sheet.
Yeah, just show him that sheet, I guess.
Show him this sheet.
Now... That I guess, brings me back to a little bit of my recollection of Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And his departure really kind of screwed me. Because right here, I have an email from Spike Eskin that says, if I win two more of these, I get Al's job.
Wow. Well, then we'd have to cancel. If you space it out, I will retire in less than 5 years.
That's true.
That's what I was thinking. Al retires as executive producer, goes off into there, and then I can my initials are actually AL. So you know you can even keep the Al and Jerry.
Yeah.
You can keep the Al and Jerry name.
You know what? Spike does work for the company in Philadelphia. I would follow up with an email. I'm sure his email is still the same.
It probably is.
Yeah.
That'd be
great.
That's interesting. All right. So I guess let's talk a little bit about your experiences working with each of these program directors.
All right.
And what's one thing that you've learned from each of them?
Well, I will say from Spike, one thing I found out, I am really annoying to argue with. Like, I am a very annoying person to argue with. Like, people get angry at me because I'm annoying in the way I argue. And I will say that Spike is one guy that I have had many arguments with, where I walk away having learned something. Like he did, like things that I thought I was 100% sure on, and I would battle with him on, and I would walk away having learned something. And I thought Spike was a very good arguer in that he didn't get all crazy. He didn't match my argument style back. And I thought that would, I always thought about that with Spike, that I just thought he's a good arguer. Like to get a point across without being a dick, where I feel like I'm always kind of a dick when I'm arguing. So that I learned from Spike. Ryan kind of just got here, so I don't know that I've learned anything from him yet. And Chernoff was the radio guy that I spent the most time with. What did I learn? Well, what I learned from Mark is that you can... annoy the on-air talent unless they're really good, and then you kind of have to let them do their own thing. And you kind of have to, you're the boss, but they're really the boss. It's kind of like a head coach.
Like a player and a manager or a coach. Yeah.
Like Juan Soto. If Juan Soto's being Juan Soto, Aaron Boone's not his boss. Juan mm-hmm. Soto's the boss.
Yeah.
And I think Mark knows that, and I think treated the talent that way. Like if you were a talent who was very productive for the company, he wouldn't bust your balls as much as somebody that was not in that position.
Well, as Craig said, like the minute they became number one.
Yeah, that was the deal Craig had with Mark when Mark was telling him, don't talk about this. Craig said, well, when we become number one, these rules are out the window. And he said, okay, because Mark would have, at the time we were taking over for Imus, you said the show would be number one. Mark would have signed up for anything, as all of us would have. So And that happened, and then Craig held him to that.
Jerry, have you learned any great things from the program director?
I think I would say about Spike, I thought he handled people very well. I think he was great with opportunity. I would give the most credit for me to, and the most I learned from would be Eric Spitz, who was now at Sirius XM when I was a kid. He's the one that hired me. And really, I would say, taught me the ropes and how to do what I do, how to go out and be in the locker rooms and then anchor and all sorts of things like that. Ryan, I'm going to go with Al. Ryan is not here all that long. I think he's a good people person so far. He has good sports radio ideas, but I will hold off judgment until I think a little longer. But so far, I think he's been great.
But I think that's in us having this, thinking about him, is that he didn't come in like a bulldog and just push, push. You got to come in, figure out what's going on, see what's working before you really like start getting crazy with things.
He didn't walk in and say, I'm the boss. You're going to follow me. It was, he really kind of got the lay of the land here first. And I think he's starting to make his mark. So I think that's a better conversation for another year from now.
Yeah, next year.
And for Mark, I will say a great family man.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice. Yeah.
Beautiful, Jerry.
All right, so I'm going to call an audible and bring up something that's not on the list.
Oh,
because Al brought up arguing. And I know you guys talked a little bit about this topic earlier this week, and it was the Jason Kelce smashing that guy's phone. And both of you guys agreed that it was justified, and or like you were like, that's fine. Like,
yeah,
I'm okay with that. I'm going to test my argumentative skills and bring a different perspective and try to explain why I disagree with what he did.
All right, sir.
And I'll do this in the form of an anecdote from when I was in like middle school or like fifth grade. Because at the time, like somebody had called me a name or whatnot. And I was very upset when I was that age. And it sort of persisted, and it sort of escalated a little bit. And both of us got sent to the principal's office. And as I was sitting in the principal's office waiting for the principal to come out and speak with both of us, I thought to myself in that moment, what am I doing here? Why did I do this? And why did I let this guy just saying words annoy me to provoke a reaction? And I can tell you right now, I don't know the guy's name. I don't remember what he looks like.
Sure.
And that was something that I learned, or I guess something that a takeaway that I learned in like the sixth grade. No matter what anybody says about me, about anybody I know, as if I don't know who that person is that is saying it, like, I don't care. Okay, say whatever you want. I would probably say there are maybe 10 to 20 people on the entire earth whose opinions I actually care about. If you're not one of those people, say whatever you want. I don't care. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to ignore it. And to me, that's why I disagreed with what Jason Kelce did, damaging that person's phone. I mean,
scumbag, and he deserved it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
I also think if it probably happens to him wherever he is now, where people are in your face with the phone, and at some point, you don't get to say, I know they're just words. Sometimes at some point you don't get to say whatever you want to somebody's face without a consequence. And then you may have to pay a consequence for doing
something. We already have that. It's called social media.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You could be a douche on social media and no one could punch you in the face. But if you're going to do that in somebody's face, you might get punched. And then Jason Kelce will then, if he decides to do that, will then have to face whatever consequences come from that. But my guess is this guy's not going to be sticking his phone calling people that name in their faces very often, unless he wants to keep getting a new phone.
I mean, then why ever confront the bully? Just let the bully say what he wants to say and do what he's going to do.
If it's just verbal, then you can ignore it. And
a lot of times it is just verbal.
Then,
and they
like,
screw around with your head.
Punch
him in the goddamn face, knock him down, and then you never hear from him again. Otherwise, he keeps going, and he goes to the next one and the next one, and he gets inside people's heads. What you're saying is not wrong in theory. Practically, it's completely wrong because that's not the way people think. It's not the way people react. I mean, we could say that about the incoming president of the United States then. Why do we care about what he says? Just go do what you're going to do. Say whatever you want. Words don't matter. In theory, you're right, but that's not the way people think.
Okay.
Human emotion. I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but that is what it is.
I think you're saying I'm wrong, which is fine.
I think you're wrong, but you, in your mind, if you're right, you're right.
I think
my words shouldn't matter what you think.
I think that me personally, I've been able to sort of, since I learned this at such a young age, I was just like, since then, I was like, words don't really matter what people say.
And you're
if you did not learn that at a young age, then perhaps you're.
I was never bullied, so I didn't have to learn that lesson. And I don't know why I never was. I wasn't. I was never the most popular. I wasn't the least popular. I was always just kind of in the middle. But we've all seen it, and it sucks to see someone that, you know, is depressed because of what's going on in school. The fact that you were able to move past it is a credit to you, 100%. I'm not saying you're wrong, or I think it's great that you were able to move. A lot of people can't do that, though. There's a reason why all we do is run ads for depression and mindfulness and, you know, all sorts of issues that people have psychologically now. And a lot of it has to do with words.
Okay. See, now, Al, Al and Jerry, you've opened my eyes to something.
See that?
That's Al's argumentative abilities right there. All right. So let's do a more fun topic. Al,
right.
I know you love nutrition and diet.
Yes.
Most disciplined guy I know.
One thing that I feel like is not mentioned enough about that is that the role of genetics that...
Yeah, because I think a lot of that is crap. Yeah. People will say genetics. I think you can say genetics if you're doing all the other things right. If you're not, then you don't know whether it's genetics or not. Like, the people that cry genetics are not disciplined in their diet. There is nobody who is obese who is not eating poor food. There isn't.
I was going to go in a different direction related to that. I was just saying that the optimal diet is different based on your genetics.
False.
You don't believe that?
No. I think if you eat whole foods, you can eat whatever you want with that and you are not going to be fat. Mm. And if you don't do that, then you'll be heavy. Like when I see a large father and a large mother and large children, those kids aren't large because of the genetics. Those kids are large because they're eating the same foods as the large mother and large father.
So in your opinion, the optimal diet for just somebody is basically the same. Regardless for who.
Correct.
Jerry, you agree?
I do agree. I think some people can eat crappier foods and get away with it.
Yeah.
Because their metabolism is different than others. For instance, my wife can eat bowls of pasta until the day she dies and she doesn't seem to gain a pound. I look at pasta and I gain weight. The only time I've ever really lost weight in the last 10 years or so was when I cut out all the crap back in June. And I did it I've gotten away from it a little bit. I need to get back to being stricter, but the weight, the first 18, 20 pounds came off pretty quick when I got rid of all the boxed food. I replaced regular bread with Ezekiel bread, which even that was only once a week. I didn't even have that every day. It was once a week. I'm not even sure if that would be considered whole food or not, but there were some concessions I made to try and make it lasting. And it's the only time I've ever seen the weight come off. You know, I could eat. Theoretically, there's not much fat in pasta. The problem is pasta turns to sugar in your body, and it just does terrible things. For me, my wife, not so much. Now, that said, I don't think my wife could sit there and eat gobs and gobs of candy and not gain weight or eat cereal all the time. But for some reason, pasta doesn't seem to affect her. So it is a little different for some people in terms of what they can deal with. I can't. But what I do know is if for me, when I have eaten right like that, I have seen the weight come off.
I will say I do love cereal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are experiences like O'Jerry's saying, like that his. I think there can be people eating very poorly that are thin, but there are not overweight people that are eating really well.
Okay, I could see that. Like you're saying that people that talk about genetics too much are using it as a bit of an excuse. Okay, one counterpoint that I'll bring, maybe that you can sort of think about. Is that Like, for example, people in Asia don't eat a lot of dairy. Just historically, they don't really have cheese as much as places in Europe, for example. So what would you say in response to the theory that if you have a food that, such as dairy, that you historically your culture has not eaten for past generations, the ability to digest that food is different than for people that have been eating that type of food for a long time?
Yes, but I don't think that would make you heavy. I would think you can't digest it till you're not going to eat it because you don't feel good after you have it.
Okay. So in the context of a quote-unquote optimal diet for average person, that would be what I would think about in terms of genetics. That's what I was referring to. Like, oh, there are some people that they just, in prior generations where they are descended from, they might not eat cheese, or they might not eat, I don't know, butter, or something like that. That was more specifically what I was thinking about as when you say the optimal diet or the role of genetics in diet.
So you're thinking that it's the things that foods that are not available in certain cultures, or they're not used in certain cultures?
Yeah. So let's say, Al, your ancestors, for example, never ate spinach. And if you eat spinach, your body just never learned what to do with spinach.
Okay.
It might be completely fine for Jerry to eat spinach in a salad every day. Mm-hmm. But for you, it might cause you issues in your life because you just, no one in your family ever ate spinach. I think that's a possibility.
Sure.
That like diet should be a little bit more individualized as to there are general tenets that are good for everybody, like eating whole foods, but there are specific things based on your genetic history, your family history, that might be like, oh, in general it's really good to eat spinach, but if your family doesn't know how to process spinach because they just never ate it, it's possible that it's a good idea for you to eat less spinach.
Sure.
Okay.
But I'm not replacing that spinach with Fruit Loops.
No, I'm not.
I would replace the spinach with broccoli or something, another whole food item.
Right. So you can sort of interchange things that work better for you then.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess we sort of
moving along. I like this.
Met in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off select styles. Plus, score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. That's up to 45% off and a free measure now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk a little bit about some of your, I guess, more controversial theories, Al.
Oh, okay. I love a good theory.
So, and I quote, people don't really enjoy things. They just want to leave the house.
Correct.
And Jerry.
I love leaving the house.
Jerry loves leaving the house.
I hate being home.
Do you love leaving the house because you want to do something or because you don't want to be in the house?
I find being in the house one of the most boring things, that you're just passing time until you die.
Okay.
I do feel that way. He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
Like, I look at it as if I'm not accomplishing something or working towards a goal, what exactly am I doing other than existing? And I find, and it just is, I know I am in the minority because there's nothing more popular on television than Netflix. So I get it. And binging shows, I feel like I'm a dinosaur with this. I find it to be just a complete waste of my time. Doesn't mean I don't watch shows. I do. But an hour at a time and I'm out. That's it. Otherwise, I feel like I'm just watching the clock tick away. So I like to be active. I like to do things. Now, I fill up my day with things I like to do. I don't just say, I can't sit here. Let me go outside on and bear crawl around the neighborhood. I mean, I love playing golf. I spend a lot of time with my kids playing golf. I do like going out to dinner. I'm getting tired of that with these prices. I like being active.
Okay. So, Al, if you could expound on your theory a little bit.
My theory is this. Like, something like, let's use going to Disney, taking the family on a vacation to Disney. Mm-hmm. People will pay a lot of money to do that.
Yeah.
But when you break down the individual days, people are miserable waiting in line to go on the rides, getting through all the lunatics, sweating. All that stuff is not enjoyable. And yet people do it, things like that, because they think, oh, you're supposed to want to go to Disney.
Except for one thing you're missing there, the kids.
Yeah, the trip to Disney
is... It's really
is...
not about the parents. I mean, there are people like the Maluses, like Mark Malusis. You know Mark Malusis? You know that name?
I know who he is.
Yeah. They are Disney freaks. They went there for their honeymoon. That's a little different. Most do it for the kids.
I can see that.
And while you are right in the sense of you go in the middle of July, you're going to sweat your balls off. If you've got kids that are not, how should I say this the right way? I don't want to say that they're not happy, but they're tough to please. You have a tough day.
Yeah.
You are really going to have a tough day. And you are right about that. And you may never want to go back. But ultimately, it does start with the kids wanting to go there and taking them for the experience. But as adults, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like for an adult thing, if you were going to go like, oh, I'm going to go to an outdoor festival concert.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yeah.
That happens down by me. The See Here Now Festival. It's a 2-day event down at the Jersey Shore. It's concerts and all these different stages. Everyone wants to go. When you go there, there's way too many people. You're standing around in line. You can't get anywhere near the stage. And I look at it as people just feel like, oh, it's here in town. I have to go. And the only way they enjoy it is if they're slamming beers or smoking weed. So if you remove the beers and weed, if you remove alcohol and weed from things, I think people would not do a lot of stuff.
I will say that I don't love outdoor festivals, especially where I live, because it is extremely hot.
It is, yeah.
But I did go to one last year. It was around this time. It was like the Country Bay Music Festival. Traffic was a pain.
Yes.
It was really hot out. There was very little shade.
Sounds awesome.
But at the end of it, I did really enjoy seeing the acts perform that I wanted to go see. And I would do it again if it was acts that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
So in my mind, this is how I've always sort of thought about it. Like, if you go on a trip somewhere, the travel is terrible.
Yes.
You got to go to the airport. You got to drive, all that. That part is sucky. But the experience, so for the trip to be worth it, the experience itself needs to be like a 10 out of 10, a 9 out of 10, way better than the experience you could have just doing something around where you live locally. Like Jerry,
yes.
if you went to go play golf, just by yourself,
mm-hmm.
That might be like a 7 out of 10 experience. And then Jerry, if you went to on a trip to the Bahamas, while you're at the actual Bahamas, that might be a 10 out of 10 experience.
For sure.
But to balance out that 10 out of 10, you got the 4 out of 10 of going to the airport, the 3 out of 10 of dealing with the traffic. So your experience, if you look at the time frame, you need to have a long enough time of it being 10 out of 10 to balance out the time, the periods where it's.
Yeah, not. And I can even pull from last year where we went to Texas for a week to go to see the Astros and the Rangers and do a whole bunch of stuff out there for a vacation. And our trip, which we were flying on a Sunday at 7 a.m., we were flying direct to Houston. And on Saturday, I got an email that said my flight was canceled and they were putting us on connecting flights. That we were going to Hilton Head, and then we had to stay in Hilton Head until 4 o'clock. And we wound up getting to the hotel Sunday night at midnight. We lost the entire day. Mm-hmm. That was just a garbage travel day. In the end, I had a blast. And when I look back at the photos and everything, yes, I think back to Sunday, and that was tough. But the trip was great. We had a really good time. And in the moment, you can be frustrated. I certainly was. You can be pissed off. I certainly was. I lost a lot of money on that, even though they somewhat refunded us a little bit. Even though it was their fault. But in the end, the only way to do these things is to have to accept the fact that sometimes travel blows.
And right.
As long as here, I'll give you an example where all the effort put in was not worth it. And this comes back to G, which we've talked about. And this was, I've rented houses in Long Beach Island 4 times. When you rent a house, you got to pack up the car. You got to go shopping because you got to do everything, pack all of that. And you had traffic getting down there for the switch out day on Saturday. We got down there 2 of the 4 times we saw sun, like 2 out of the 7 days. You know how much money, time, and effort was completely wasted by staring out the window down the Jersey Shore? I mean, you want to talk about a 1 out of 10 trip. And it wasn't because of the company. I mean, you go there to be at the beach and do things outside, and you've got nothing to do but play Scrabble. I could do that at home.
Right.
That sucked.
I will say, where I live right next to the beach.
Yeah.
When it rains, there is considerably less activities and
for
stuff
sure.
to do.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say is the ideal duration for a trip or a vacation? Let's just say domestically, if you're going someplace you've never been in the United States.
Me? Domestically? I mean, unless you're going to California, I'd say a week's good.
A week? Okay.
I'm good with a week.
Al? 5 days, including travel days.
Okay. Does that include the legendary buffer day that you get to recover?
No, that's why it's only 5 days, because I need to take a buffer day on the side when I get back at home.
It's funny how different we are, because when I get on, the way I like to do it is I would prefer to fly Friday afternoon once I get the hell out of here, go home, grab the stuff, and go to the airport, and I want to come home Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and then come into work Monday, whereas you want to go home, travel
home Saturday.
Sunday.
Yeah, again, get home Saturday.
Right.
Have all Saturday midday, then have all the Sunday,
exactly.
And then go to work Monday. Yes.
Yeah. It's just different
buffer days.
Different thoughts. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, so I did, today's Thursday. I came to New York on Monday.
Okay.
So I've been in the city, I guess it's like 4 days roughly. So a little bit shorter than that.
And when are you going back?
I'm going back this afternoon, or this evening.
This evening.
But I feel like I did so much stuff that, like, I packed so many things mm-hmm. in that I'm, like, exhausted. So, like, an extra day or an extra 2 days, I would just be, like...
I think it depends on the trip, though, too. Like, you took an active trip in the city.
Right.
My trips... Texas was kind of very active, but a lot of my trips are beach resorts, a lot of laying around,
yeah,
having drinks, sleeping. I'm pretty rested when I get home. I remember when I went to San Francisco with my family. We came back. I was exhausted. Because all it was sightseeing and, you know, hiking. And I got home like, holy crap, I need a couple of days. Kind of, I needed the buffer day.
Yeah, you need a buffer day.
So I do think it depends. I don't know if you were in the Bahamas for these 4 days that you would feel that way.
Definitely.
You might feel a little more rested.
But I also felt like coming to New York, you know, it's expensive to get mm-hmm. a hotel.
Yeah,
so
we've heard.
I'm not going to sit and like
sure.
rest
yeah.
in my hotel. You know?
No, it's
like,
an active
I'm
trip.
I'm going to do things
yeah.
while I'm here.
What is the? No, here's a question for you. You come. I know you've been here before many times. Obviously, you used to live around here. What is the? You come to New York City. What's the main thing you want to do? Is it experience the restaurants, taking a show? Is it what?
Well, I mean, I plan my trip around coming here, so I guess that's
okay.
That's number one.
Number two.
Number two, I mean...
Yeah, like it's Thursday. You were here Monday. What are what things were you doing?
I went to go see 2 Broadway shows okay. this week. I'd seen one a couple of years ago, but I wanted to see a handful of others. I went to some very nice restaurants, so that was also like something like fine dining or and whatnot. Because when I'm just at my house, like by myself, I don't go out to restaurants unless I'm going with like a guest or somebody that's coming to visit me. So like, there have been like maybe like 3 month spans before where I didn't go to a restaurant once, and then like on this trip, I'm going to restaurants twice a day.
Got it.
Yeah, I think New York City is good for that. Like, I would be uncomfortable going to a restaurant by myself in my town or anywhere other than New York City. The anonymity and weirdness of New York City makes it so that it's not uncomfortable for me to be in a place by myself.
That actually goes very nicely with another topic that I have on here. I want to talk about...
like, if you went to a restaurant tonight and there was a man dining alone in a chicken suit, he basically wouldn't even be bothered. You know what I mean? In New York.
Yeah.
Where if that was in my town, they'd be like, why is
cops.
There... Yeah. That's what I do like. That's one thing I do like about New York City is a feeling of anonymity in that no one really is looking at what you're doing.
I think that... When it comes to doing things like alone, I feel like there's more of an internal like hurdle that you have to get over.
Yeah.
And then once you get over it, it's just like nobody else really cares.
Correct.
That you're doing it alone.
Sure.
Like I went to a concert last night. I was there by myself because I don't live here. So I didn't really know anybody. It was fine. Like
I never minded a solo going to a concert solo, especially if it was a standing. Where you were just standing.
Okay.
Because that, yeah, I think you can blend in and no one's paying attention to you and you're paying attention to the stage anyway.
Okay. So how would you guys feel about going to like a Broadway show by yourself?
I think I would be able to do that.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah. I never really thought about it, but yeah, why not?
So tangential to that, I remember, Al, you telling the story of you going to see Jerry Maguire by yourself. So what's different between going and watching Broadway yourself versus watching a movie by yourself?
Again, I think it's because it was New York City.
Okay.
So in New York City, going to Broadway, I feel like I could just roll up in there and no big deal. And at the time, I was super self-conscious to go to a movie by myself in a regular suburb felt very weird to me. I don't think I'd feel weird now going to a movie by myself because I think it's also you hear people do it more often. But it also didn't help that it was Easter and I was by myself in a movie theater watching Jerry Maguire.
That's funny.
I will say I go to movies by myself all the time, and it's great. It's I do it because there's a place where I can charge my car right next door.
Oh, smart.
So, you know, that's like 2 hours that I just charge my car.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But no, I love going to movies by myself because also, even if you go with your family, Jerry, like, typically, you're watching the screen for 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might have a side conversation for a few moments.
Yeah, you're there to watch the movie.
Yeah, you're there to watch the film. Yeah. It's really a more solo experience.
Mm-hmm. Gina has said many times to me, I felt like I was at that concert by myself being with you. That's what she said, because I'm so locked in on what's going on. I'm like, having a conversation. It's music's blasting. I'm watching the show. So I felt like I was there by myself.
So if it's somebody that you really want to see, like the artist is somebody you really want to see, I definitely understand that.
Yeah.
But I've been to concerts where like I know like maybe a handful of songs. And then that's more of where I'll be like, oh, I'll talk to people.
Yes.
I'll like, it might be a more fun experience almost.
Yeah.
Just like as a social experience, to go to a band that you don't love,
right?
Like religiously, because then you don't have to be so focused, so locked in.
For sure.
All right. So, another topic that I have on here related to concerts, and here's a question that I don't know the answer to.
All right.
Why doesn't the opener just play like one or two covers of like the main person songs that are not on the set list? I feel like that would really jazz up the crowd,
interesting.
Right?
Never like, thought of that.
You're there to see the main performer most of the time. Unless they're Taylor Swift, there's probably going to be like a couple songs that don't make the set list.
I think, you know, I think there's a good blend there that could work, where if it's a new and up and coming band, they play what they want to get out and then maybe lead into the act with a couple of covers to kind of get you ready for the show. And yet if it's a opening act that you've heard of, yeah, maybe you, like, I remember went to see Pink with my wife last summer. Pat Benatar was the opening act.
Yeah.
She was outstanding. I don't want to hear Pat Benatar do Pink. Okay. But if it's like some up-and-coming artist that you really never heard of, that would be really cool. That's a neat idea.
Yeah, I like that.
I think it's a good idea as well. We got consensus.
Be great if you get the set list and be like, I'm going to do the first three songs as well. Bruce Springsteen's doing tonight.
Show him out backstage. Like, what the hell is he doing?
What is this dick doing out there?
That's funny.
Now, do you like to see the set list before you go?
I would say no, but I always look at their previous shows, which I shouldn't, because then I know essentially what the set list is. But I would rather not know, but I can't help myself from looking.
I've never looked. I didn't even know that existed until you showed me a couple years ago. So no.
I would just look at like, oh, what did they play two nights ago? What I like to see when I'm looking at that is, are they changing it up? Because if they're not, then I'm like, oh, this is the show. But I also like to sometimes ballpark, here's a bathroom situation for me.
All right.
When he hits Born in the USA, I know it's a song I'm not that into after. Perfect time to go.
I try to avoid seeing the set list as much as I can.
You do lose the surprise.
I want to be surprised. Yeah. And then related to the bathroom, I just try not to drink anything. Like, I got to be... Yeah. Especially like that one that was like outside a festival that was like 10 hours outside.
Well, you're out in the sun with no liquids. That's trouble.
Yeah, I was probably dehydrated, but you know, I had a good like spot and I didn't want to give that up.
That's very tough.
All right, so I guess let's talk a little bit about your travels for the show. You guys went to Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And from what I recall, you didn't really love the experience.
That sounds about right for me, because I was away from my home and all of my things that I do the same exact way every day.
Now, but on the other hand, you really enjoyed going to Phoenix.
I did like Phoenix.
Extra hour. All right, so it doesn't sound like much, but I don't know why. There's something about getting up at 12:30. Going downstairs and people's nights are still just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's when in Vegas, we were going downstairs. Our studio was at the Wynn.
Right.
So we would be getting up at 12:30, trying to make it as normal as we could. Take a shower. You go downstairs. The elevator opens and it's chaos.
Yeah.
And people are drinking and it's still the nighttime. There was something very strange about that. And for whatever reason in Arizona, which was 2 hours, it was early, but it felt a little more normal. I don't know why. But it was different.
And when you go outdoors in Arizona, you see the mountains and all these things. And Vegas, to me, is a very indoorsy, casino. It's just all the things I really don't want to do. Gambling, drinking, smoking. Like, it just was like all like the... It was like all of the vices in one location.
Right. The only thing he was good with were the whores. No.
And dinners, those two things. Correct, Jerry.
Al did used to live in Tampa, so...
I did. Oh, yeah.
I will say, I just found that interesting because I go to Vegas every year. I have a fabulous time. The food is fantastic. Going to restaurants and whatnot. I enjoy walking up and down. And
sure.
I at least try to... walk off some of the calories that I consume. Mm-hmm. And then the one time I went to Phoenix, it was so cold. It was like New Year's, and it was 49 degrees as the high.
Wow.
It was rainy, like one of the days.
Yeah, I'd be miserable.
I was not having a good time. I was like, I thought this was a warm weather state.
Yeah, I did a New Year's there as well one time, and it was freaking freezing. I thought I was going to go swimming.
Yeah. I only brought shorts.
Yeah,
it was a tough time. So I just found that interesting because my experience was sort of the opposite of you guys. I really enjoyed going to Vegas.
See, there's two different things. So there's going to Vegas, and then there's going to Vegas to work from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. New York time.
So I will say every time I go to Vegas, or not every time, but most of the times I go to Vegas is for work purposes. So I'm attending, I go to a conference there, and it's not 5 a.m.
So you're at the, but that's the thing. Like, we had to be at our desk at 1 a.m.
Right. It's not that, it's not super early, but it's like 7:30 Vegas time, which is 4:30.
Sounds lovely.
I guess that's true.
It depends on where you're coming from. For us, that sounds lovely.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like you couldn't enjoy the evening because you're looking at your watch or the clock. You got to get to sleep. Then when you do lay down, you're only looking at 4 hours sleep, maybe. You're waking up, it's the middle, and I was like, you didn't know which way you were going. You know, but I do like Vegas just to go.
Yeah.
Just not to work these hours.
Okay.
Just when we're up against the clock here, we probably got another. What do you think here, Jerry?
I can run into the. I need 45 seconds to run into the other studio.
Okay, so let's say let's say 7 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That way we'll get you in time.
All right, I'm going to skip my most voluminous topic then, because that's more than 7 minutes.
Okay.
I'll do a couple quick hitters.
Oh, quick hitters.
All right, so I remember 2 years ago I came in, we talked about sports broadcasters. Just one question for Al. Have you revised your opinion regarding Andrew Catalan now that he's Tiki Barber's partner?
Yeah, I think I had confused Andrew Catalan. I think I had combined a couple of different broadcasters and the qualities I didn't like of them, and I pinned them all on him. So I would say, yes, I have revised, and I like Andrew Catalan now. I was confusing him with numerous other guys.
That's not a good characteristic to have if you are Andrew Catalan, that you're easily confusable for other people.
But at least he's found the error of his ways.
Right.
Yeah, at least Tiki's not going to have to defend his partner in front
of him. No, he will not. No. I do
Andrew
like him.
Andrew's solid. He does a good job.
Yeah, I like him. Jerry pointed me in the right direction on that one.
Okay. Another quick hitter. Jerry, I bought your calendar for this year.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I did notice that it was much more positive.
Yes.
Which my family will certainly appreciate because they didn't love all the death quotes. If I could, I'd like to submit a potential quote for 2026.
Ooh, okay.
If you are still doing the calendar for that year. And this is from my sister.
Okay.
My favorite sister, Catherine. Right.
I hope you only have one.
I do only have one sister.
Oh, thank God.
All right. This is from Catherine. Hard work gets you nothing but heartache and a bad back.
I like that.
I don't agree with that. In certain cases, she is very right. In other cases, it's really what gets you ahead, especially with this generation.
I guess physical hard work maybe would give you the bad back.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Yeah, we can put that into the mix for 2026.
Okay.
We can put that into the mix. I went more positive because, to be quite honest, looking at those quotes every day as the year went on, I was actually cringing.
I see.
I know, you know, they're funny. I get it. But as I'm looking at them, I'm like, what am I doing? What the hell?
Yeah, what is this?
So, yes, I did go more positive on purpose this year.
Okay. And I guess the last quick hitter that I'll give you. I know, Al, you spent a lot of time worrying.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that helps me, like, not worry as much is if you sort of introspectively look and see, what are the things that I was worried about and which of them actually came to pass? And most of the time, a lot of the things that you were concerned about, that you were worried about,
correct,
didn't even happen.
Yes.
So if you could think about that a little bit more critically, maybe that'll help you not worry as much about some of the things. Once you know that, like, a lot of these things that I'm thinking about are not even going to be real issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of Stoic philosophy.
Okay,
and
that's
a very big thing with the Stoics. And I read a passage every day, and it's very similar stuff all the time, reinforcing. I will think of that while I'm, but then my anxiety will get the best of me. It'll whoosh, attack me.
Have you noticed any improvement, though?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
Other than I'm aware of it. I'm aware that way that you said happens, that a lot of stuff doesn't come true. I'm aware when I'm doing, but then something snaps in my head and I still worry.
Okay.
And I do think part of that, and I could be wrong. I mean, you're both single, so you can tell me. I think part of that, too, is when you're only worried about you, all you're worried about is what's on your calendar, and you do seem to lock in on things.
Yes.
Whereas for me, because I have two kids and a wife, there's so much going on. Like, for instance, I had to go speak to a high school on Monday. Now, if you had that on your calendar, go to speak at a high school at 12:30 on a Monday, my guess is on the Monday before, you're sitting there saying, oh, my God, in 7, I got to do this.
For sure.
Tuesday, you're thinking about it. Friday, like, holy crap, and it's going to ruin your weekend.
Yeah.
I forgot about it. My wife texted me Monday morning, said, by the way, you have to go to the school today. I'm like, oh, crap, I forgot.
I know. Right. That's the funniest thing to me when you'll be like, oh, I got a Rutgers game tomorrow. I'm like, oh, my God, Jerry, that, in Minnesota. I'm like, that would be on my mind for a month.
So, like, this weekend I'll be in Tampa Sunday, and I've got a Rutgers game Monday night. I know he would be panicked about it.
Full panic.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if it was Tampa, I would be just thinking about
the Bonds. I might be interested.
He would be thinking about the Bonds.
Off the plane,
Jerry.
Right to the Bonds.
Right to the Bonds.
That is funny.
All right, let's do one more question.
All right, so... I had a couple of, I don't have any real questions left, I had a thought related to what you just said regarding the worrying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, like, planning things out would help you reduce that, or, like, it's just something that's...
No, I actually think doing more things spontaneously would help that.
Okay.
Because you don't have to think about it.
Because I don't have to think about it in advance, yeah. Like I hate having anything on my calendar for Saturday or Sunday. I hate it. Like, I have a Rutgers game scheduled Saturday. I have, right now, no interest. But if I had woken up Saturday and did all my dumb stuff, have my coffee, and then it was 10 o'clock and I had nothing to do.
Sunny.
Hey, you want to go to Rutgers game? I'd be like, yeah, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Jerry, you just said that both of us are single. Did Al dump Gina, or
no? He just means married, that, not married kids, family, intact family.
He lives alone. He doesn't live together.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's all I mean by that.
I see.
That's what I mean.
Oh, all yeah.
All right. And last, I guess, quick hitter.
Yes.
I do this every year, but I wanted to check how is Mr. Paul? Is he
Paul is doing well. We didn't talk for a very long time for no real reason. Nothing happened, but we talk generally through email, Paul and I. And I will tell you, probably 9 or 10 months went by, and then I sent him a long email about just random thoughts, and then he sent me, and now we've been going back and forth. So he's doing very well.
It is interesting how you can pick up with certain people. Like, yeah. I've got the same group of, like, 5 or 6 friends that I've known, and I went to grammar school with them from the time we were in either kindergarten or first grade straight through high school. And it's like probably five guys. There's a few of them I won't talk to for months. And then you'll get a random text when I get a beer later. Sure.
Yeah.
It's like you hung out with them every day. It's just strange how, you know, you can have relations. And then there are other people like, you don't call, you don't text. Like,
right.
Get over yourself. Like, we're all busy.
Yeah, we're very busy.
You know, so I do got to go do the 11.
All right, Jerry.
Enjoyed it. I'll be back.
All right. I have to go, Jerry. It's that's it. That's your warm-up show. We'll do the warm-up show next. You want to do a see ya?
Sure.
Go ahead.
So.
There you go.
Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off select styles. Plus, score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. That's up to 45% off and a free measure now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.